So we are holding on Tess Amud Aleph, 8th line. A line we can drop on them. We mentioned yesterday about the Kohenim Gdolim of the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, where many of them would last for only a year or less than a year, whether because many of them would die in the Kodesh HaKadoshim because they weren't worthy of going in there, or whether because the kings or whoever was in charge at the time would replace them every year. So now the Gemara is going to expand on that point a little bit about the contrast between the first and the second Beis HaMikdash, and then we're going to go on to talk about other differences between the different Batei Mikdash. So, Amar Rabba Babachana, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, my dichtiv, what does it mean, a pasuk in Mishlei, Yiras Hashem Tosif Yomim, the fear of Hashem lengthens, adds time, adds days to a person's life. In other words, a person who fears Hashem lives longer. Ushnos Rishoyim Tiktsona, but the years of Rishoyim will be shortened. So that refers to Yiras Hashem Tosif Yomim, Zem Mikdash Risha, and this refers to the first Beis Mikdash, Sha'amad Arameyas Ve'eses Shanim, it stood for 410 years. Only 18 Kohenim Gdolim served in it, which when you think about it, if you divide it down, it comes out that each of these Kohenim Gdolim served on average for 20 odd years. 18 times 20 would be 360. So you have another 54 years, brings you to 414. So each one served for around 22, 23 years. In the long run, obviously it doesn't mean that, each one by themselves is an average of that, but some of them, of course, serve much longer. And more to the point, actually, you have a number of different gersois here in the Gemara of what the actual number is. Now, what it is like this: you have psukim and divrei yamim that describe the descent, the family tree from Aaron all the way down to Yehotzadok, who was the last Kohen Gadol of the first Beis Mikdash. Or it's not clear if he actually served as Kohen Gadol, or if he was just the next, he was the heir apparent to the Kohen Gadol. His father Sroya was definitely Kohen Gadol. His father Sroya was actually executed by Nebuchadnezzar. Yehotzadok himself, did he actually serve as Kohen Gadol or not? Nobody's sure, but he was the father of Yeshua ben Yehotzadok, who was the first Kohen Gadol of the second Beis Mikdash. Anyway, the Pasuk lists over there, you have Elazar, Aaron had a son Elazar, who had a son Pinchas, who had a son, going down the line over there. Now, so there's a number of ways of looking at it. Counting from Pinchas down to Yehotzadok, you have 19 names. So if you subtract Yehotzadok himself, seeing as how he went into Golos, then that leaves you 18. So that's one way of understanding how we get 18 over here. The problem with that is that Pinchas himself didn't serve in the first Beis Hamikdash. He lived in the Midbar. Okay, he lived a long time, but Lav Dafka, he was still alive at the time of when the first Beis HaMikdash was built, if we say Pinchas is Eliyahu, then he was, but we don't find Eliyahu himself serving as Kohen Gadol at all. Another issue is in those psukim, in the middle of the list over there, you get to someone named Azariah, and the pasuk says on him, he's the one who served in the mikdash in the house that Shlomo built, which makes it sound like he was the first Kohen Gadol there. So now another way of looking at it, then Tosfos brings from the Riva, that if you count from him until the end of the list, you can see on the first couple of lines of Tosfos, you have Azariah, and then you continue from there, Amaria, Chituv, Tzaduk, Shalom, etc. Then you have nine names. So then what you have is actually, if you subtract Yehotzadok himself, since he went into Golos, then you have eight. So therefore, maybe the Girsa should be eight rather than 18. Tosfos says, actually, no, if you count Yehotzadok, and each Kohen Gadol had a Sgan, so then 9 times 2 is 18. So it would actually work. But in any case, if you learn it that way, that there were only 8 and not, that there were only 8 or 9, then, of course, it means that each one had a very much longer tenure. 18, we're saying, averages 22 years per 22, 23 years apiece. If you say that there were only eight of them, then it means that each one served on average over 50 years. And nine, if you say nine of them, similar idea. It means that each one served a very long time, and that really is Yiras Hashem Tosif Yamin. A different girsa that Tosfos brings at the bottom, Tosfos Yishanim brings, Agoris Agra brings, is that actually the number should be 12. That counts from Tzadik. You have earlier in that list, you have Tzadik, where we find in throughout Sefer Melachim that that Tzadik was the first Kohen Gadol in the first in the first Beis Hamikdash. He lived in Shlomo HaMelech's times. So again, counting from him till the end of the list, you have 12. In that case, 12 Kohenim Gadolim in 410 years comes out an average of about 35 years apiece. According to that, by the way, what does it mean that Azariah was the one who served in the Beis Hamikdash? It means that he was the one who stood up against King Uzziyahu. We have the famous story that Uzziyahu came into the Beis Hamikdash to bring Torahs. He figured that it's been an honor to Hashem that the king down here on earth should be makriv Torahs to Hashem in the Beis Hamikdash. And Azariah, the Kohen Gadol, stood up against him and told him no. And the upshot was that Uzziyahu got saras. So therefore, for that reason, according to that, is why Azariah is called the one that served in the Beis Hamikdash, because he was Moser Nefesh to uphold the Kedusha of it. Anyway, those are the various Girsois over here as far as the number of Kohenim Gedolim. But the point is, no matter what, whether it's eight or nine or 12 or 18, it still means that each one served on average for quite a long time. On the other hand, when the pasuk continues, the years of the Rishoyim are shortened, Zemikdash Sheni, that refers by contrast to the second Mishmikdash, Sha'amad Dalad Meis Ve'esrim Shana, it stood 420 years, so only 10 years more than the first Mishmikdash, Vishim Shabo Yos Mishloish Meis Kainim. Over 300 Kainim Gdolim served in the second Mishmikdash. Tosfos actually brings from a medrash that says that there were only somewhere in the 80, 81, 82 different opinions. Tosfos says maybe that's only referring to the ones descended from Pinchas. So you had most of the Kohenim Gedolim, or many of the Kohenim Gedolim, were descended from Pinchas, but not all of them. So out of them, you had 80 some that were descended from Pinchas, and then a bunch that were descended from other families. As far as the first Beis Hamikdash, actually, not everybody agrees that we learn it from those psukim in Divrei Hayamim, especially because we do know from Sefer Shmuel in the beginning of Malachim that there were other Kohenim Gedolim from other families. Eli HaKohen was from a different family. He was descended from Isamar. He had his grandson and his great-grandson were Kohenim Gedolim for a period of time. So there's different other possibilities where we learn that there were 18 or whatever the number is. Anyway, the second Beis Hamikdash, we're saying there were over 300. So now, okay, 300 in 420 years already is fairly short, because it means that each one is on average less than a year and a half. But more than that, say mehem mem shana sheshimish Shimon HaTzadik, subtract from that 40 years that Shimon HaTzadik served as Kohen Gadol, or shmonim sheshimish Yochanan Kohen Gadol, and 80 that Yochanan Kohen Gadol served before he became a tzaddiki. Who Yochanan Kohen Gadol was, there's a number of different opinions. Is he Matisyahu's father? Is he Matisyahu's son? Is he Matisyahu's grandson? Whatever the case, we know from various places in the Gemara that he served for 80 years and then became a tzaddiki. Esa Shashimish Yishmael ben Pavi. There were 10 years that Yishmael ben Pavi served as Kohen Gadol. We learned about him in Psachim. He himself was a tzaddik, and in fact, the Gemara says over there that when he came to serve in the Beis Hamikdash, the Azorah itself cried, like the walls and floor of the Azorah, so to speak, cried out and said that Yishmael ben Pavi should come and serve in the Kohen Gadolah because he really deserves it. His family, unfortunately, the Gemara says over there, were very corrupt and lorded it over the people, but he himself was a tzaddik. So there's 10 years of him. V'amrilah, or others say, instead of that, you'd Aleph Shishimish Rabbi Elazar ben Charsum, that instead you have to count 11 years that Rabbi Elazar ben Charsum served as Kohen Gadol. Rabbi Elazar ben Charsum, we're going to come up with him later in the Masechta and Daf Lamed Hei. He was extremely rich. It doesn't say in the Gemara when he lived, that Amman places him in the time of Antigonus Ish-Sechai. Anyway, he was Kohen Gadol for 11 years. So now if you subtract all of that, 40 and 80 and is 120 plus 10 or 11 is 130, 131. So subtract that, you have left less than 300 years. So now, if you subtract that, it comes out of the remaining 300 kohenim of the almost 300 kohenim gedolim, or we said there were more than 300, and then we have these four. So of the 300 kohenim gedolim, it means that kol echad ve'echad lo hotzi shnasoi, each of the other ones did not even live out a full year. So that's the contrast that relative to the ones in the first Bais Hamikdash, the ones in the second Bais Hamikdash relatively were Rishoyim, and therefore many of them did not live out their years. Again, like we mentioned yesterday, the Rebbe talks about Nesicha, that nevertheless you see the greatness of these people, that they're willing to pay huge sums of money and then risk their lives just to have the experience of going in and experiencing the Kedusha of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Hagoy Sabach, by the way, adds in a line over here that Rabbi Yechon, why were so many of them dying in the Kodesh HaKadoshim and not living out the year? Because they're buying the Kohuna Gdola with money. We find that Mauta Bas Baisus brought in a huge container of gold coins as bribe to Yanei HaMelech, ad de oikmeli Yeshua ben Gamla b'kani Rav Revi, until he appointed Yeshua ben Gamla, who was her husband, as the Kohen Gadol. So we see that there were Kohenim Gdolim during the time of the second Bais Hamikdash who bought their position with money, and they weren't really worthy of it. Mind you, the Gemara does say elsewhere that this Yeshua ben Gamla, it was that we owe to him the fact that the Torah wasn't forgotten, because he made the takana that there should be melamdim in every city to start teaching the kids when they're 5, 6, 7 years old. But apparently the idea is that nevertheless it was wrong of him to be buying his way into the position, and therefore laughed Africa that he lived that long in it. And the Mefoshim do talk about different. It seems that there were other Kohenim Gdolim during the second Bais Hamikdash who were good and should be listed in this list. One possibility is some of them, Taka, may have passed away younger for other reasons, nothing to do with that they bought the position and didn't and died when they went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But still, you know, B'derech HaTeva, Kohen Gadol is appointed when he's, relatively speaking, when he's fairly old. So some of them, Poshet, may not have lived that long for natural reasons. Rabbi Yaakov Emden wants to say that maybe there were others, but we don't know how long they were Kohen Gadol for, unlike the ones we mentioned in the Gemara over here, where we know that Shimon HaTzadik was 40 years. We know that Yochanan Kohen Gadol was 80 years, etc. Therefore, the Gemara doesn't list them because it's not definitive. Okay, so that's the bottom line is, in other words, that there were vastly more Kohenim Gdolim in the second Bais Hamikdash than in the first. And the point is that the Gemara says that expresses this idea, therefore, that because they were Rishoyim, they lasted much less time than in office than the Kohenim Gedolim of the first Bais Hamikdash, who were on average 20 years or 40 years or 50 years or whatever. Okay, Amar Rabbi Yechon ben Tursa. Also, Rabbi Yechon ben Tursa says, now the printed Gemara that we have over here is a new thing that Rabbi Yechon ben Tursa is going to say about the contrasts between the Mishkan Shiloh and the first Bais Hamikdash and the second Bais Hamikdash. According to Agoy Sabach, who added that detail about that Rabbi Yechon ben Tursa says that the Kohenim Gdolim bought the Kohenim Gdolim with money in this time of the second Bais Hamikdash, then this is a direct continuation. Having mentioned one thing that he says, the Gemara goes on to mention another thing that he says. This Rabbi Yechon ben Tursa, by the way, is the one from the, according to some of the Mefarshim, is the one from the famous story where you have, there was a Yid who had to sell his cow to a Goy, and then the following Shabbos, the cow wouldn't work. And when the goy is trying to beat it and is trying to give it good food and whatever, and nothing doing. So he goes over to the Yid, and the Yid explains to him that this cow has been used to all these years not working on Shabbos, and therefore instinctively now it won't work on Shabbos either, even though of course it doesn't know, it doesn't realize that you, its owner, are a goy and allowed to work with it on Shabbos. The upshot is, the Medrash continues, that the goy was very impressed by that. If even a cow can keep Shabbos, how much more so me, a human being, should? And he ended up becoming a ger, and he became the Rabbi Yechon ben Tursa of our Gemara over here. The word Tursa means a female cow. It means a cow. So like he named himself that because he became a ger, and he became a yid thanks to a cow. Anyway, so Amar Rabbi Yechon ben Tursa, Mipnei Ma Chorva Shiloi, why was Mishkan Shiloi destroyed? Mipnei Shahoya Ba Shnei Dvorim, because there were two problems. There were two averis that were being done there. Gili Arayas Ubizoyin Kodshim. Gili Arayis, what was where do we see there was Gili Arayis over there? Yikhtiv, the pasuk says, "Ve'eli zaken ma'od." Eli was very old. Ve'shama es kol asher yasun one of l'chol Yisrael. He heard about what his children are doing to the Jewish people, which the earlier pasukim describe. We're going to talk about on Omid Beis. They would force people to give peace, to give them pieces of the korbanos that they didn't deserve. They would take, they would eat those parts even before the chaylev was offered on the mizbeach. So he heard about all of that, the Esa Shayishkavun as a Noshamat service, Pesach Oyamoyed, and how they would lie together with the women who came and gathered by the door of the Oyamoyed, which is Gilei Arayis. Now the Gemara continues, Va'afa Gav, the Amr of Shmuel ben Achmeni, Amr of Yochanan, or Rav Yonason, really it's supposed to be. Now, even though it is true that Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni says in the name of Rav Yonason, Kol Omer Bnei Eli Chotu, Enei El Toya, we learned this in Shabbos, anybody who says that Bnei Eli actually sinned with Gilei Arayis is wrong, which the Gusa we have in front of us in the Gemara, Va'afa Gav, is that the Gemara is going to say that they didn't actually do Gilei Arayis, but the Pasuk still calls it as if it was Gilei Arayis, as we're going to see in a second. The other possibility is there is a Gusa over here. The Ritva brings a Gusa, not Va'afa Gav, but Upliga, the Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni. That Rabbi Yechon ben Tursa is disagreeing with Rabbi Shmuel ben Achmeni. According to Rabbi Yechon ben Tursa, they did actual Gilei Arayis. And according to Rabbi Shmuel ben Achmeni, they didn't, but they did something else that we're going to say now in a second. The Gemara in Shabbos, by the way, has a machlokes about this also. There is an opinion over there, actually, that sort of splits the difference and says that Chofni actually did Gilei Arayis, but Pinchas did not. The Gemara over there says, the Gemara bases that on the fact that Pinchas' descendants, the Pesukim tell us over there, that Pinchas' descendants were Kohenim Gdolim, and they wouldn't have been able to be, the Eibishter wouldn't have allowed that they should be Kohenim Gdolim if their ancestor Pinchas had actually been guilty of Gilei Arayis. Anyway, so Rav Shmuel ben Achmeni says that Bnei Eli did not actually do Gilei Arayis, Enei El Toya, he's just making a mistake. What it is Mitoich Shishihu as Kenehen. What it is they would delay bringing the korbanos of birds. Women would bring birds as a korban when they after they gave birth. We know the Torah told us in Parshas Tazria that a rich woman brings one sheep and one bird as a korban. A poor woman, and I guess most people in those days were poor, would bring two birds. One as an oila, one as a chatas. Now, these Chofni and Pinchas, these sons of Eli, who are in charge of things in Mishkan Shiloh, they would not bother. They would take their time bringing these korbanos. So meanwhile, now the women. Now, technically, the women could just, as we learned in Masechta Shkalim, the women could just drop off the birds or the money, and then they could leave and assume that the kohenim are going to do their job. Instead, the women would actually stay in Shiloh. And to make sure the korban was actually brought. Therefore, the pasuk, according to this, the pasuk considers with Chofni and Pinchas as if they were mezana with these women because they were mevatel them from period virivia. They prevented. Now these women are not going home in time and being with their husbands, and therefore they're preventing period virivia from happening. So therefore, the pasuk blames Chofni and Pinchas as if they actually slept with these women. There are different other explanations that Mephoshim say on the Pasuk. One of them, to make it a little closer to the Pshat, is that since these women would stay over in Shiloh, so they're sleeping outside the Oyel Moed, they're sleeping outside the Mishkan. Meanwhile, you'd have men who were also staying over there who wanted to bring korbanos or who were staying by the Mishkan for whatever reason. And therefore, you'd end up having men and women mingling together in inappropriate ways and maybe even leading to actual znus. Anyway, miha, so therefore, malale and akosav ke'ilu shochum, therefore the posuk counts it as if they slept with them. So again, so one way of understanding is that Rabbi Shmuel ben Achmeni is not disagreeing with Rabbi Yechon ben Tursa. He's saying that it's true there was no actual Gilei Arayis that Chofni and Pinchas did, or that anybody did. Nevertheless, because of this delay in the korbanos, the pasuk considers it as if they did that. Al derech, like we have, for example, when the Gemara has in Shabbos over there, Koloim a David chata ene elatoya, Koloim a Reuven chata ene elatoya. You have a bunch of those over there where the Gemara explains about various figures in Tanakh that when it says they did such and such an aveda, it doesn't mean it literally. They did something else, but because they were on a high level, the pasuk considers it as if they did something much worse. Another example, Shlomo Melech with his wives worshipping Avodah Zarah, etc. Anyway, so that's one way of understanding. The other way of understanding in Or Gemara is that there is an actual machlokes. Rabbi Yechon ben Tursa would hold that Chofni and Pinchas were guilty of actual Gilei Arayis, and Rabbi Shmuel ben Achmeni is saying that no, it was just that they delayed the bird korbanos. Why are they delaying the birds more than anything else? By the way, one of the Mefarshim points out, but you think about it, a bird korban, a chatas, the koyanim eat it, but there's not much meat on it. So like Chofni and Pinchas, they're in no hurry to bring such korbanos because we're not going to get much out of it anyway. Therefore, we'll get to them another day. We don't have to get to them today, which is wrong. It's a bazillion of the kodshim. It interferes with people's lives, with people's marital lives. So that's one, bizoyan kodshim. The other problem that was in Mishkan Shiloh is that they're showing disrespect to the kodshim that people do bring. Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says over there in Shmuel, gam beterem yaktirin es achelev. Another problem, previously in the Pesukim, it describes how Chofni and Pinchas would demand that people give them more parts of the korban than they deserved. Like this, they're only supposed to get from a korban shlomim, for example. They're only supposed to get the chos of a sheik, but instead they would go and grab whatever piece suited their fancy. And then the pasuk continues, gam b'terem yaktirin es ha-chelev, also before they offered the chelev on the mizbeach, uvon nar ha-kohen, a young man from these kohenim, from Chofni and Pinchas, would go over to a balabos, va'omal isha zeveach, he'd tell the person who's bringing the korban, t'na boso litzles ha-kohen, give the kohen Chofni or Pinchas meat to roast. He doesn't want from you cooked meat. He wants a davka raw. And the man would say to them, well, what are you in such a hurry? They're going to offer the chaylev today on the mizbeach, and then after that, after that, take whatever you want, because don't you hate. In other words, unlike the first group that it's not mentioned in the Gemara over here, where the Kohenim would actually go and physically grab a piece of meat, here they're just telling the person, give such and such a piece, and the guy would say, okay, I have no problem giving it, fine, but at least wait till after the chelev is brought. But Omar Loi and the servant of the Kohen would tell him, or actually in the Pasuk, you actually have a kriuk siv over there, Loi means no. Ki atositin, you have to give it now. V'im loy lakachti b'chozka, and if not, then I'm going to take it by force. And the pasuk continues, v'ati chatas ha'na'orim g'doyle ma'od as p'nei Hashem. The sin of these young men, Chofni and Pinchas, is very great in the presence of Hashem. Ki nietzu ha'anoshim es minchas Hashem, because by that they were blaspheming, and they're showing that they have no respect for the offering of Hashem. They're acting as though the korbanos are their personal or their personal possession, rather than the proper. Her attitude is that Kohenim Meshulchan Gavoya Kazafu, that the Eibishter's table, and then the Kohenim get to eat at it like honored guests. And instead, they're acting like it belongs, like it's their personal thing, and they can take whatever they want, whenever they want, even before the Chelev is brought on the Mizbeach, even before Hashem receives his portion. So those are the two Averis, Gilui Arayis, again, whether actual Gilui Arayis, whether something tantamount to Gilui Arayis, whatever, and Bizoyin of Kodshim, those were the two reasons. Rabbi Yochanan ben Tirsa is telling us why Mishkan Shiloh was destroyed. Next, continues the Gemara. Bepashtus, this is a continuation of what Rabbi Yochanan ben Tirsa is saying. Mikdash Rishon Mipnei Machariv. Why was the first space of Mikdash destroyed? Mipnei Gimel Dvarim Shehoyu Boy, because there were three major averes that were being done in the first space of Mikdash. Avodah Zarah v'Gilui Arayis v'Shfichas Dam. Where do we see Psukim showing all of that? Avodah Zarah, Dichtiv. Now, you have many Psukim that say that they were worshipping Avodah Zarah, but where do we see specifically a Pasuk that as a result of that, the Beis Mikdash was going to be destroyed? Dichtiv, you have a Pasuk in Yeshaya, Ki Kotzer HaMatzah Mehistoreya. The whole pasuk goes, the Gemara is going to darish in both halves of the pasuk. Ki kotzer hamatzah meistareya. Literally, what it means is the mat, like a mat that you lay on to go to sleep. The mat is too short to stretch out on. And the pasuk continues, v'amaseicha tzorech hiskanes. And the maseicha, which literally means the cast image, is too narrow. It is too narrow for gathering in. So what does that mean? Let's dash in the first half of the pasuk. My kotzer amatzah mehistoreya. What does that first half of the pasuk mean? The mat is too short to spread out on. So the Gemara is going to dash in the word mehistoreya as made up of two words, mehistorer reim. from having two colleagues or two rivals both be ruling over it. So it means Amar Rabbi Yonasan Kotza Matzazeh. The Eibishter is saying this mat, this place where I want to rest, the Shechina should rest in the Beis Hamikdash and the Kodesh HaKodashim is too small. May starter all of Shnei Reim Keechad. Then that two rivals should be ruling over it at the same time. Who are the rivals? So Rashi brings up. We know that Menashe set up an idol in the Heichel. In fact, there are other places that it says that his son Amon went even beyond that. And actually, that the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, Menashe put an idol in the Heichel. Amon, his son, went even further and placed in the Kodesh HaKadosh. So therefore, so now the Eibishter is saying, so to speak, like if this Avodah Zarah is there, then I can't be there. It's too small for me and the Avodah Zarah, so to speak, as rivals to both be in the same place. So if Avodah Zarah is in, then I'm out. And the pasuk continues, "Vamaseicha tzara kehiskanes." The pasuk continues, the maseicha, the cast image tzara is narrow kehiskanes. When it comes to the gathering, so what does that mean? Omer of Shmuel bar Nachmani kimati Rabbi Yonasan mahaykra. When Rabbi Yonasan, who was Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani's rebbe, would reach this pasuk, bochi, he would cry. Omer, he says, how could it be? What the pasuk is saying is that the Eivishter, who's able to gather in all the water in the world, meaning by on the third day of Ma'aseh Bereishis, when the Eibishter says Yikavu Amayim, that all the water should gather in one place, and later on by Kriyas Yamsuf. So the Eibishter, who has those capabilities, D'chtiv Bei, that it says on him, Koines Kaned Me'ayam, he gathers the waters of the sea together like a wall. A kaneid, like nitzvuk moneid noizlim in Oz Yosher, nasis lemaseichat tzara. How could it be that a cast, that a molten metal image should become a rival to Hashem to the point where Hashem says I can't be there? So Rabbi Yochanan would cry when he thought about that. Why dafka are we mentioning the praise of the Eibishter over here that he gathers in the water? So a couple of the Mefarshim and Ein Yaakov talk about possibilities. One of them is we see by the third day of Ma'aseh Bereishis, that the Eibishter controls where the water goes. Yikavu Amayim, the water should go over here, and the dry land should be over here. And now, so to speak, the Eibishter is saying, they brought in an Avodah Zarah, and I have, Kavyochol, I have no ability to remove it, because obviously the Eibishter has the ability, but he has to leave people, Bechir HaChavshis. So therefore, Hayitochen, like, so to speak, the Eibishter acts as though he can't remove it, whereas he was able to remove all that water in the world and put it where it's supposed to go. Another explanation that it brings over there in the Mefarshim and Ein Yaakov is we find that when they crossed the Yamsuf, they had Pesel Micha with them. And still the Eibishter said, they have Pesel Micha. They're doing very wrong on that. Nevertheless, I'm still going to split the Yamsuf for them. So Hayitochen now, all these years later, the Eibishter is acting as though he can't, as though he still can't do whatever he wants in the presence of Avodah Zarah. Whatever the case, the point is we see that there was Avodah Zarah in the first Beis Mikdash to the extent that the Eibishter's Shechina actually left it, and therefore that it was exposed to be destroyed by the Goy.
First one. Was the first Beis Mikdash, all this?
This is the first Beis Mikdash we're talking about. This is all the first Beis Mikdash we're talking about. Yeah, the second Beis Mikdash we're going to get to soon. Next, Gili Arai is Tichtiv. The pasuk says also in Yeshaya, Vayomer Hashem. The Eibishter says, "Yan ki govhu b'nois Tzion, because the daughters of Tzion were very high, v'teilachna natuyes gadon u'masakris enayim, they walked with their necks outstretched and with their eyes masakris." The Gemara is going to darish in phrase by phrase what all this means. The simple meaning of masakris, the Mefarshim say on the pasuk, means that they're winking or they're doing something to make their eyes attractive. Holech v'tofosh teilachna, they walk. They walk and tofoif, like they're towering over aglehen ta'akasna, and they ta'akasna with their feet. So what does all this mean? What do all these phrases mean? So the Gemara Darshan's phrase by phrase. We have this in Masechta Shabbos as well. Yan ki govu b'nois Tzion. The pasuk says the daughters of Tzion, and that includes the married women, are acting high. What does that mean? They would make a point of a tall woman would walk davka next to a short one in order to show off her height. Like this, her height is much more noticeable. In other words, they're trying to call attention to themselves. And again, as married women, they have no business doing that. So that's the first thing that you could go over Benoisian. Vatelachne Turiyes Gordon. The pasuk continues that they went with their necks outstretched, which means Shoyim Halchus Bekomer Skufa. They would walk with their heads and their bodies held straight up, not. Like this, that Rambam describes, for example, in Hilchos Deis, that when a person is walking, they should have their head down a little bit to show respect for the Shechina, not down all the way, like looking at your toes, but that Rambam describes that a person should be looking down a little bit, like when a person is preoccupied with their business and walking and walking and thinking, like. They didn't do that. Instead, they walked davka with their head and their body held high. And the Gemara mentions in Sota and some other places that if a person walks like that, then it's like they're pushing away the Shechina. Doichik ragle Shechina. Because they're showing like I'm the one who owns this area and the Eibishter doesn't. Next, the pasuk continues. Holich v'tofav telachna. Umasakre senayim. It continues almost sacrilegious with their eyes, meaning to have a malyan kuchla in nehun. They would put koichel, which is a kind of eyeshadow or eye powder, in their eyes with the idea of making their eyes look more attractive. So the Gemara is darshining the word masakris, meloshen sikra, which is a kind of paint. So they would paint their eyes with makeup in order to show them off, in order that people should look at them. And the pasuk continues, holich v'tofif tinlachna. They would go holich v'tofif, which means holy mahalchus, okiv v'tzad gudol. They would walk heel to toe. They took tiny little mincing steps in order to show off how they're walking and attract men to them. Over aglayan ta akasna. And what does it mean with their feet ta akasna? They would take myrrh and afarsman, which are various kinds of very fragrant perfumes, put those perfumes in their shoes, and they're walking around in the streets. Agoras Habach adds the words, when they're walking by young Jewish men, but boyatos, they would kick the ground with their shoes in order to make the fragrance spread. Or matizes alehen and sprinkle some of the fragrance on these boys. Machnisin ben yetzahara keeres bakos and cause yetzahara to go into them like the poison of a snake. A kos is a type of snake that has a very powerful venom. So the same way, like they're injecting them with this venom and making therefore that now they have a yetzahara towards them. So it's interesting. The pasuk doesn't actually say that they're actually being mizaneh, just that they're doing these things which are a lack of tznius and a pritzistic way of acting. But apparently the Gemara is saying either, like we said before, for example, about Bnei Eli, that even if they're not actually doing Gilei Arayis, it's tantamount to doing Gilei Arayis because Jewish girls or Jewish women are not supposed to behave this way. Or what the Gemara means is it started with that and eventually it progressed to actual Gilei Arayis. We find by the Aseres HaShvatim, where it talks that they did actual Gilei Arayis, and as far as some of the kings of Yehuda, it says that they did, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, that Ochaz and Menasheh and Amon and Yehoyakim did various forms of Gilei Arayis, but that's the kings. The Gemara is going to mention later that you have certain things that it says the kings did, loved after the people at large were doing. But the people at large are doing these kinds of things that we're describing, these pritzistic activities. So again, either we're saying that's tantamount to Gilei Arayis, even if it's not actual, or that it led eventually to Gilei Arayis, even though the pasuk doesn't say so in so many words. Okay. The third one, Shvichos Damim, where do we see that there was bloodshed going on in Yerushalayim? Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, V'gam dam noki shofach Menashe habri ma'od. Menashe also spilled a lot of innocent blood. Adash emilias Yerushalayim pelafer, till the point we filled up Yerushalayim from one end to the other with blood. So therefore, now that was Menashe, who was a king, but still, obviously, he didn't do that all himself. It means that he had his henchmen doing it. So therefore, you see that among the people at large, there was Shvichos Damim. The Gemara, by the way, in Sanhedrin, because a couple of opinions, what this means exactly. One is that specifically it refers to the fact that he killed Yeshaya. Another opinion the Gemara says over there is he had a very heavy avodah zarah that he forced people to drag, to carry from one place to another, and the weight of it would kill them. Whatever the case, the point is there was shvichas damim going on, and therefore that's the third thing for which the first Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. Continues the Gemara. Aval Mikdash Sheni. But on the other hand, now let's contrast that with the second Mitzvah Mikdash. Show you Oiskin Batod over Mitzvahs of Gmilas Chasadim. In the second Mitzvah Mikdash, they didn't have these things. They didn't have Avodah Zarah in particular, we know they didn't have, because the Gemara mentions later on in Or Masechta and also in Sanhedrin that the Anshik Nesagdola Davin, that the Yetzahara for Avodah Zarah should be taken away. So in the second Mitzvah Mikdash, you didn't have, like this you had, there were Misyavnim and people like that during the second Mitzvah Mikdash who worshipped Avodah Zarah, but that was more, they were doing it more as a cultural thing to fit in with the Greeks, not so much because they believed in it, and not so much because they're doing it as Jews. In the first Mitzvah Mikdash, you had people who were there. I'm a Jew, but nevertheless, I'm worshiping Avodah Zarah in the same way that nowadays you have people who are from Jew, who are ostensibly from Jews, but talk Lashon Hara or do business dishonestly or whatever, and they don't see a stira in it. The same way in the first Mitzvah Mikdash, you had people who are worshiping Avodah Zarah and didn't see that as a stira to being a from Jew. In the second Mitzvah Mikdash, you didn't have that anymore. A person who's worshiping Avodah Zarah is obviously doing it as he excluded himself from the Jewish people, like the Misyafnim. As far as Gilui Arayos, we don't find that in the second Mitzvah Mikdash as well. As far as Shvichas Damim, the truth is we do actually find towards the end of the second Mitzvah Mikdash. So there was Shvichas Damim. You have, for example, the Biryonim. But the Gemara is going to mention soon, Sinas Chinam, that was basically an outgrowth of that. It wasn't they're doing Shvichas Damim, just so to speak, for its own sake. They're doing it as part of Sinas Chinam. So therefore, so they were Oisik Batodo of Mitzvahs of Milas Hasadim, Mipnei Machorev. So why was the second Mitzvah Mikdash destroyed? And the reason is, Mipnei Shahoisaboy Sinas Chinam, because they had Sinas Chinam in the second Mitzvah Mikdash. And we have the famous example of it, the story of Kamsa Bar Kamsa, where the guy throughout Bar Kamsa from his meal, from his Suda, rather than even tolerate that he should pay for the entire meal. So that's an example of Sinas Chinam, and there were other examples where and therefore the second Mitzvah Mikdash was destroyed because of that. There's a very famous expression, of course, that says that the Mitzvah Mikdash was destroyed because of Sinas Chinam, and it'll be rebuilt because of Avas Chinam. And of course, every year when it came around the 9 days, in particular 3 weeks, the Rebbe would stress the idea that we have to be Moisif in Avas Yisrael to undo that Sinas Chinam that led to the Churban Bayis Sheni. Anyway, Lalamdecha continues the Gemara. You can learn from this. Shashkula Sinas Chinam connected Sholosh Averes Avodah Zarah Gilui Arayos Shvichas Damim. You see from this that Sinas Chinam is as bad as Avodah Zarah Gilui Arayos and Shvichas Damim altogether, because we see that the first Mitzvah Mikdash, it took those three Averes to destroy it, whereas the second Mitzvah Mikdash, all it took was Sinas Chinam. Continues the Gemara. Rishoyim Hoyu, they were Rishoyim. Elish Tolo B'Tchoinim B'Akadosh Baruch Hu, but they put their trust in Hashem, and they said that the Bismikdash, that Hashem is never going to destroy his own Bismikdash. So the Gemara interjects, Asan L'Mikdash Rishon. Now we're going back to the first Bismikdash. So we're saying, again, we said that the people of the first Bismikdash, they were guilty of Avodah Zarah Gilui Arayos Shvichas Damim, but nevertheless, we're saying that they were Rishoyim. They were trusting, they were saying, how could it be that Hashem would destroy his Bismikdash? Therefore, they were figuring he won't, and therefore we're safe. In fact, Agoris Habach moves this line to earlier before we started talking about the second Bismikdash. Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says, Rosheha B'Sheichad Yishpoitu, in the time of the first Mitzvah Mikdash, the Navi is criticizing the leadership of the Jewish people. The heads, meaning the Dayanim, B'Sheichad Yishpoitu, they're judging based on Sheichad. People will give them bribes and they'll judge accordingly. B'Koyanea B'Mchir Yoru, the Koyanim, when they're teaching Torah, will only do it for a fee. They'll charge money, and if not, they're not going to teach you Torah. And maybe the idea is also that they're teaching wrongly, depending on if a person pays them off enough, then they'll paskin in his favor. And it's Nevi'im will do magic for money. Same idea, in other words, they'll say false Nevuah for money. Obviously, we're not talking about, obviously, in that time, there were good Shoftim and good Kohenim and good Nevi'im. I mean, you have some of the real Nevi'im, for example, Yirmiyahu, Fakert, they were saying things that people didn't want to hear, and they kept on getting beaten up and thrown in jail, etc. But obviously, we're talking about the bad ones in each of these groups, the bad Shoftim, the bad Kohenim, and the bad Nevi'im. And the pasuk continues, Va'al Hashem Yishoenu Lamer, but they rely on Hashem saying, Haloy Hashem B'kirbenu, isn't Hashem in our presence, therefore Lo Yisavay Aleinu Ra, therefore no evil will befall us. So they thought, because the Eibishter Shechina is among us in the Beis Mikdash, therefore we can get away with it, we can do whatever we want, and nothing's going to happen because the Eibishter is not going to allow his house, the Beis Mikdash, to be destroyed. Lefichach, because they thought that way, Hevi alein HaKadosh Baruch Hu gimel gzeiros keneged gimel averos v'yadam. Therefore, instead, the Eibishter brought on them three punishments, as the pasuk continues in Micha, where they're corresponding to the three averos that they did. So either it means the three averos of Gilead of Avodah Zarah, Gilead Arayis, and Shfichas Damim, or it means the three averos we just mentioned of the judges, the Kohenim, and the Nevi. Shenema, as the pasuk continues, the next pasuk in Micha continues, Lochein, therefore, Biglauchem, because of you, Tzion Sada Sechoresh, Tzion is going to be plowed up like a field, the Yerushalayim Iyin Tia, Yerushalayim will be heaps of ruins, Bahara Bayis Levomais Yar, and the Hara Bayis will be a high place, which will be a forest, it'll be uninhabited. So three things corresponding to the three things that they did. One explanation, the Maharal says, is that Sion refers to the fact that Yerushalayim is the place of Nevuah. The Gemara mentions in Megillah, for example, that when it says it, when it doesn't say where a Navi came from, then it means he came from Yerushalayim, because by default, then Yerushalayim more than any place else was conducive to Nevuah. So therefore, because the Nevi'im are acting wrongly, therefore Tzion gets destroyed. Yerushalayim represents that it's the place of judgment, of teaching and paskening Torah. Therefore, because the Shoftim are paskening wrongly, therefore Yerushalayim gets destroyed. And the Harabayis represents the Harabayis is where they do the Avodah, and therefore and since the Kohenim are also acting wrongly, so therefore Yerushalayim, therefore the Harabayis gets destroyed as well, corresponding to these three things. By the way, you have different psukim throughout Nevi'im Achronim. You have a number of psukim that express this idea that the people figured that the Beis Mikdash is among us, therefore we're safe. The Eibishter is never going to allow the Beis Mikdash to be destroyed. And of course, the Eibishter showed them that they're wrong. We mentioned before that the Shechina left the first Beis Mikdash. And in fact, you have, for example, you have Nevuos of Yechezkel, where he sees the Shechina withdrawing from the Beis Mikdash in stages. And he was meant to tell that to the people as a warning. You know, you're thinking that the Shechina is in the Beis Mikdash, therefore you're safe. The Shechina is actually leaving the Beis Mikdash, therefore don't think that you're safe. There's also, interestingly, a Medrash that mentions that when the Aseres HaShevatim went into Golos, and we know they had done terrible Averis as well, some people were thinking, you know what, the Eibishter is not really being fair. Okay, he sent them into Golos, true, because they don't have his Beis Mikdash, but the Eibishter is showing favoritism to Yehuda and Binyamin. They did Averis as well. Why are they not going into Golos? It must be that Hashem is showing favoritism to them because of the Beis Mikdash. Then eventually, when the Beis Mikdash was destroyed and Yehuda and Binyamin went into Golos as well, then everybody realized that, no, Hashem is fair. It's just that Yehuda and Binyamin at the time of the Golos Aseres HaShevatim hadn't done enough Averis to warrant Golos yet. But after all, the Eibishter is fair, and he doesn't spare anybody just because they have the Beis Mikdash and just because they have the Korbanos and the Avodah in their territory. Okay, the Gemara continues. Over Mikdash Rishon Lehavabei Sinas Chinam. You're telling me in the first Beis Mikdash, you're saying that in the first Beis Mikdash there was Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayis, and Shfichus Damim, but apparently not Sinas Chinam. And the second Beis Mikdash, it was the other way around. There was Sinas Chinam, but not the other three. You're telling me there was no Sinas Chinam in the first Beis Mikdash. V'haksiv, you have a posik in Yechezkel. Migure el cheruv hoyuas ami. The simple meaning of the pasuk, the Mephoshim explained that migure means being afraid, like vayogo moyov. So migure el cheruv hoyuas ami. My people had to be afraid of the sword. Lachen tsfoik el yorich. Therefore, Hashem tells the Navi, bang on your thigh, which is an expression of tsar. A person bangs and beats it and beats his thighs out of frustration. But the Gemara darshins, the word megure doesn't just mean afraid, but Amar Rabbi Eliezer or Rabbi Lazar, Eilu b'nei Adam sha'ochlen v'shoisen zeim zeh. This refers to people who eat and drink together. So megure means meloshen that they live together. They live and they do things together, like the Eretz megure aviv. And then meanwhile they're piercing each other with their tongues that are as sharp as swords. In other words, they're saying Lashon Hara about each other. Now Lashon Hara, of course, is an outgrowth of Sinas Chinam. So therefore, in other words, what the pasuk is saying is that my people are living comfortably with each other, megure, but really el cherev. They don't realize that the other person, meanwhile, is stabbing them in the back with a shunt, with a tongue like a sword. And therefore, the Eibishter tells the Navi, lochein sfoik el yorich. Therefore, beat on your thigh out of frustration and out of sadness at what's going to happen to them. So we see that they had sinas chinam and they talked lashon hara as well. The answer is Ahubanisi Yisrael, Havoi. That was specifically about the kings. Dichtiv, as the next pasuk continues. Za'ak, actually not this, not the next pasuk, but the beginning of that same pasuk begins. Za'ak v'heil ben Adam, the Eibishter tells the Navi, cry out and mourn ben Adam, which is the name for Yechezkel throughout the Sefer. The Eibishter calls him ben Adam. Ki hi hoisa ba'ami, because this is among my people. And then he continues with the second half of the pasuk that we just quoted, Meguri ocherev hoyuasami. V'tanya, and we learn in a braisa. That, what does he mean? When it says za'ak v'heil ben Adam, when Hashem tells him to cry out and to mourn, because this is among my people, yochol lako, you would think that it means that all the Jewish people, or many or most of them, are guilty of this avera of stabbing each other with tongues of lashon hara. No, Talmud Lamei, he b'chol nesiyei Yisrael. Therefore, the pasuk continues. This is among the nesiim. This is among the kings and their families. But the people at large were not guilty of that. Therefore, we're correct in saying. Therefore, we're justified in saying, like the Gemara says before, there wasn't a general problem of sinas chinam in the first place of Mikdash. Just you had among the kings and their entourages. You had that, but among the regular people, instead, you had the problems of Avodah Zarah, Gila Arayis, and Shfichas Dam. Continuing on this topic, the contrast between the first and the second Beis Mikdash, Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Lozer de Ami Tavayu, Rishonim shenisgala avoinam nisgala kitzam. The earlier generation, the one where the first Beis Mikdash was destroyed, their avera is openly revealed. Meaning, Rashi says, they didn't try to cover up their averus. They did them out in the open. Therefore, nisgala kitzam, therefore their ketz was revealed, as the pasuk says, that the Ebishter sent a nevuah with Yirmiyahu, that there's going to be 70 years of golus bavel, and then the Beis Mikdash is going to be rebuilt. In other words, the idea is, as bad as it is to do averus in public, al derech, like the Gemara says, like the famous Gemara in Bava Kamma, we had it recently in Ein Yaakov, about the contrast between the ganav and the gazlan, where the gazlan isn't afraid of anybody, but it means at least he's not showing such disrespect for Hashem. He just doesn't have respect for anybody, as opposed to the ganav tries to do averus in secret, pretending as though the Eibishter is not going to see him. So for the earlier generations, they did their averus openly. So it means they have no respect for each other, but it means they have no respect for the Eibishter, but they have no respect for each other either. So in a certain sense, in a way that's not as bad. So therefore, they deserve to have a ketz that was niskala, they were told that there's going to be a certain number of years of golus. Achroinim shalein niskala avoinim. On the other hand, later generations, second Beis Mikdash, they were also rishoyim, but they were doing it in secret. They were pretending the sinas chinam. They were pretending on the whole like their friends, and secretly they're stabbing and doing thing and saying lashon hara and whatever against each other. Therefore, so to speak, they're showing less respect for the Eibishter. Therefore, lo nisgala kitzam. Therefore, their ketz was not revealed. And we still don't know how long this golus is going to last. Amar Rabbi Yechanan, also Rabbi Yechanan says in this connection, Tovat Siponon shall Rishonim Mikresen shall Achronim. The fingernails of the earlier generations are better than the stomachs of the later generations. On a Poshta sense, what he means is, in other words, the fingernail is like a very unimportant thing of the body. It's not even a living part of the body. It's dead. It's dead cells. And still, that from the earlier generations, they're the least important part of them. Is still better than the stomachs, meaning the essential organs of the later generations. In other words, again, expressing this idea that the later generations were on so much of a higher level than the later generations. Because again, they had only a short golos, whereas we have a very long one. And Marsha explains, the metaphor is, you think of an animal, the hooves of the tziporin means nails, it also means hooves, like of an animal, so the hooves of it are worthless, you can't really do anything with it. On the other hand, the softest and best part of the animal is the stomach. The same way, the most foolish and the worst of the earlier generations is better than the most important of the later generations, Rabbi Yechon is saying. There's a difference. An interesting explanation that the Vilna Gaon brings on it, that also referring to an animal, we know that there are two signs of kashrus in an animal. There is one involving the hooves, that they have to be split, and the other one involving the stomach, that the animal has to have four stomachs and chew its cud. So therefore, Rabbi Yechon is expressing the idea, in the earlier generations, They were more like like the animals that have the one siman kashrus that they chew their cud, but don't have split hooves. So therefore, like the problem is in their hooves or their nails. In fact, the medrash makes an association between the four, and there's four animals it mentions in Parshas Shmini and in Parshas Re'eh that have one siman of kashrus, and the medrash relates those to the four nations, the four empires under which the Jewish people were in Golus: Bavel, Paros, the Greeks and the Romans, where three of them chew their cud but don't have split hooves. Those represent the first three Goliaths. The fourth one, the pig, is the other way around, that has split hooves and doesn't chew its cud. And you have the famous thing we talked about in Ein Yaakov yesterday, where the pig sticks out its hooves as if to say, I'm kosher, and of course it's not because it doesn't chew its cud. So the same way Rabbi Yochanan is expressing the idea that the earlier generations were more like the animals, more like the camel and the shofan and the arneves, where the problem with them is clearly visible on the outside, that they don't have split hooves, as opposed to the later generations. The problem with them is more of an internal one, like the chazer. It shows off its hooves, it shows off its kosher to feet, but really it's treif on the inside. And the same way, expressing the idea that these later generations, the second Beis Hamikdash, they hid their averus, they hid their sinas chinam, like the pig that hides its siman of not being kosher. Amalei Rish Lakish. So Rish Lakish says to Rabbi Yochanan, you're telling me the earlier generations are better than the later ones. Adrabba Achroinim Adifi. Shouldn't you say, on the contrary, the later generations are better than the earlier ones? Afagav De'ika Shibud Malchius, because even though in later times, the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, of the second Beis Hamikdash, and afterwards, even though they were subjugated by the Goyim, Ka'aski Batorah, nevertheless, they're still learning Torah. In the first Beis Hamikdash, you see that most of the time they weren't subject to the Goyim. Most of the time there was an independent kingdom in Eretz Yisrael, and so they didn't have such problems with the government. The fact that they're learning Torah and in under those conditions is not such a big chiddush. In the second Beis Hamikdash, most of the time they're ruled over by Parasimadai, and then by the Greeks, and then by the Romans, and still they were Oisik in Torah, so that shows that they were greater. Amalei, so Rabbi Yechanan tells him, Bira Techiach, you can answer that, you can prove the contrary based on the Bira, meaning the Beis Hamikdash, Shechazer al-Rishonim, like Chazer al-Achronim. You see that it returned to the earlier generation, and it didn't return to the later generation, so you see that the earlier generation were relatively not as bad. There are actually some of the Mephoshim who say, in fact, you have the Pesukim mentioned in Sefer Ezra, that when the second Beis Hamikdash was built, you had some old people who had still been alive in the time of the first Beis Hamikdash. So you literally had people. In fact, the Gemara Hodias even says there may have even been a majority of the Jewish people at that time. So you had a substantial number of people who actually lived to see the second Beis Hamikdash, whereas there's nobody who lived from the second Beis Hamikdash to the third, because the Golos has been so long. Similarly, Shalos Rebbe Lazar. Similarly, they asked Rebbe Lazar, Rishonim Gdolim or Achronim Gdolim, which generation is greater, the earlier ones from the time of the first Beis Hamikdash, or the later ones from the time of the second Beis Hamikdash? Amalahem, so he answers them, Tnu Einechem Bebira, put your eyes on the Bira, again, the Bira being the Beis Hamikdash, take a look at the Beis Hamikdash and notice that you see that again, that the Beis Hamikdash was rebuilt not long afterwards, but after the first one, but the third Beis Hamikdash has not been built that shortly after the second one. Ika Damri, another version, Amalahem Edechem Bira, another version, he tells them, your testimony is the Bira, same idea, in other words, that you see that this Beis Hamikdash hasn't been brought back to us, but it was brought back to the generation of Golos Bavel and the next generation after that, so you see that they were greater. So according to the way we have it in the Gemara in front of us, it just sounds like it's just two different ways that Rabbi Elazar phrased it. A number of the Mephoshim over here, including Gvoras Ari and including a number of others, explain that actually there is a nuance of difference between them. They bring from a Yerushalmi that says the first Beis Hamikdash, only the roofs of the buildings were destroyed. The walls of the Heichal and the various buildings of the Beis Hamikdash remain more or less intact. As opposed to the second Beis Hamikdash, the whole thing was destroyed down to the foundations. And even the Gemara tells us in Tainus that Turnus roof was plowed up the area of the Harabais. So therefore, those are the two different versions of what Rabbi Elazar is saying. The first version, he's telling Tnuei Nechem Bebira, meaning take a look at the actual physical location of the Beis Hamikdash. If you were there after Churban Bais Rishon, you would have seen parts of the building still intact, whereas now you don't see anything intact. So you see, therefore, that the earlier generations were greater. And then the second version is he tells them that you also have the fact that they had the Beis Hamikdash rebuilt for them after a relatively short period, only 70 years, whereas we've still gone hundreds of years and by now nearly 2,000 years, and we still don't have it back yet. Continuing on this topic, the Gemara says, Rish Lakish have a sochi b'yardana. One time Rish Lakish was bathing in the Yarden River. Also, Rav Baba Chana, Yoav La Yoda, Rav Baba Chana came by and stretched out his hand to help Rish Lakish out of the water. Rav Baba Chana was one of the Talmidim of Rish Lakish. Amalei, so Rish Lakish, seeing Rav Baba Chana, he said, Elaka, I swear in the Eibishter's name, Sanina Lachu, I hate you people of Bavel. Rav Baba Chana was from a family that came from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. In fact, his uncle, or his great uncle, was Rav. The whole family had originated in Bavel, and then eventually some of them moved to Eretz Yisrael. So Rish Lakish is telling him, you Bnei Bavel, that remained in Bavel, and now only hundreds of years later came to Eretz Yisrael, I hate you. Because you staying in Babel prevented the second Beis Hamikdash from being the Geula Amitis Vashleima. Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says in Choymahi, the Pasuk says in Shir Hashirim, if the Jewish people is like a wall, Nivne Alea Tiras Kosef will build over it a silver palace. The Imdelasi, and if it's like a door, Notzer Alea Luach Orez, then we will surround it and we will besiege it with cedar panels. Meaning, Rish Lakish says, "Ima sisim atzmacham kachoyma." If you Bnei Bavel had made yourselves like a wall, where a wall is very strongly together, every brick together with every other brick, a very very solid thing. If you had made yourselves like a wall, v'alisim kochem mimei Ezra. If all of you had come up to Eretz Yisrael in the times of Ezra, nimshaltim kekesef shein rock of Sherlet boy, then we would have been like silver, which never decays. So in other words, then the second Beis Hamikdash would have been built, and it would have been the permanent Beis Hamikdash, and it would have been the Geula Amitis Vashleima. But instead, Achshav Shalisim Kedlosis, but now you went up like doors, like you have, like a Rashi describes, so in other words, the Shechina would have been in the first Beis Hamikdash, in the second Beis Hamikdash, in the same way as it was in the first, but instead you were like doors, like you have a double door, so you open one door and you close the other one, the same way like you came up piecemeal, some of you here, some of you there, when they first came up to build the second Beis Hamikdash, only 42,000 and some people came, so you came like doors, or there's a different gear, actually, Kedalos, you came out like very poorly, like again, a little here, a little there. So therefore, Nimshaltim Ke'erez, therefore you became like cedar, Shal Rock of Sherlet, where decay is able to attack cedar. So the same way, the second Beis Hamikdash was not permanent, the Shechina didn't rest in it to the same degree, and the Shechina didn't rest in it to the same degree, and therefore it ended up getting destroyed, and we ended up going into Golos again. So it's all your fault, Bnei Bavel, because you didn't come up. Maharsha adds a detail also. We find in Sefer Ezra and Nehemiah that they were in great danger in the early days of the second Beis Hamikdash because there was no wall around Yerushalayim. The wall had been broken down by Nebuchadnezzar's army and it hadn't been rebuilt up until that point, till Nehemiah finally got permission from the king to rebuild it. So therefore, so Rish Lakish is saying, in effect, if you had all come up like a wall altogether, then you wouldn't have even needed a wall to be protected from the enemies. Instead, like this, you came up like doors where like you're just guarding the gates to the city, so therefore you're like cedar which decays, meaning that Nevuah went away and the Shechina wasn't present to the same level in the second Beis Hamikdash. The Gemara asks, "My Erez, what kind of cedar are we comparing the situation in the second Beis Hamikdash to?" Oma Ola Sasmoger, they're compared to Sasmoger, my Sasmoger. So the word Sasmoger, Rashi describes, means is a kind of insect, a kind of worm, or something that eats through wood, so like a termite or something. You have a few places in Tanakh where it uses the word sos, meaning is a kind of worm like that, and the word mogger means fearful. So it's like, so to speak, the wood has to be fearful of the insect, or the word mogger can also be like the word megero, which means a saw. So it means an insect that saws through the wood. So in other words, it's like if you have that like wood that was hollowed out by termites, where all you have is you have the wood looks good on the outside, but it's rotten on the inside. So this is what it was like in the second Beis Hamikdash. My Sasmoger, What do we mean? In what sense is the situation in the time of the second Beis Mikdash like wood that was eaten up on the inside by Sasmogar? Amar Rav Abba Baskel. So Rav Abba says, in the sense they didn't have Nevuah anymore, but they still had Baskel. The same way as like the cedar is eaten through by the termites, but you still have the outer shell of it is intact. The same way they had still something, a semblance of the Nevuah of the first Beis Mikdash, namely they had Ruach HaKodesh. Kedetanya, not Ruach HaKodesh, but a Baskel. Kedetanya, as we learn in the Brisa, Mishmesu Neviim Achronim Chagas Chayim Malachim Nistalka Ruach Hakodesh Mishrael. At that point, Ruach Hakodesh left the Jewish people. There's no more Nevuah, or actually, the Rebbe talks about Nesicha. There could be Nevuah afterwards, but very, very rarely. Va'adayno Mishdamshin Baskel, but they would continue to use in Baskel. So therefore, that's it. At the end of Soita. So we'll get to it in learning for Sfira in a few weeks. But Hashem, right before Shavuos. So the point is, they had a semblance of it, like when the wood has been eaten through by termites, where you still have a semblance of what the original wood was like. So therefore, anyway, the point is, Rish Lakish is saying to Rav Abba Chana, it's all the fault of you people from Bavel that you didn't all come up at the time, and instead you came up a little here, a little there. So the Gemara asked for the Shlokish Mimishtoi Bahadi Rava Baba Chana. We're saying over here that Rava Baba Chana is coming by the river and Rish Lakish is talking to him. Did Rish Lakish in fact have conversations with Rava Baba Chana? Umar Rabbi Lazar, really, Demara de Eretz Yisrael Haba, Madach Rabbi Lazar, who was much greater than Rav Abba Chana. He was the master of Eretz Yisrael in the sense that he was the expert in Piskei Halacha. In particular, the Gemara in Nida mentions he was an expert in being able to tell what color blood is and isn't Tameh. V'loy Havam Ishtoi Rish Lakish Ba'adei, and yet Rish Lakish would not have conversations with him, which Tosfos says doesn't mean he wouldn't converse with him at all. We do find places in Shas where they have conversations. What it means is, Tosfos says, Rish Lakish would not initiate the conversation. If Rabbi Lazar begins the conversation, then Rish Lakish would answer, of course. But he doesn't initiate the conversation. And here we have it, Rish Lakish initiating the conversation. So therefore, he wouldn't even do that with Rabbi Lazar. How much more so with Rabbi Abachana? Tosfos Yishanim says it a little bit differently. Means he wouldn't talk with him milsa de b'dichusa, like just a stam casual conversation. He wouldn't talk with him. If he's going to talk with Rabbi Lazar, even if he's going to initiate the conversation, it's going to be in Divrei Torah, not in this. So the loy have a mishtoi Rish Lakish ba'day. So even with Rabbi Lazar, Rish Lakish would not just have conversations like that stam. And the reason was the manda mishtoi Rish Lakish ba'day b'shuk, because if there was a person that Rish Lakish would speak with him publicly in the marketplace, people would realize that what a high level that person is on. Yavale iska b'loy sadi, then people would be willing to trust him with money for investment without witnesses, because they would realize he must be a very great person if Rish Lakish is willing to talk with him in the street. So bahadi Rav Abachana mishtoi, how much more so Rav Abachana, who's on a lower level than Rav Lazar, Rish Lakish is not going to initiate a conversation with him or talk with him in milsa de b'dichasa. So why? So how do you have over here that Rish Lakish is talking with him, is initiating the conversation and not specifically about Divrei Torah with Rav Abachana? So the Gemara answers, Omar a papa shodi gavra b'nai. You have to put a person between them. In other words, one of the two names in the story has to be replaced with a different one. Oy Rish Lakish Havo Ze'iri. Either it was Rish Lakish and Ze'iri. So Ze'iri is great enough that Rish Lakish would start conversations with him. And therefore, it could have been Ze'iri was the one who went by and offered his arm to Rish Lakish. And Rish Lakish told him what he told him. Oy Rav Abba Chana Havo Rav Lazar. Or it was Rav Abba Chana and Rav Lazar. And in that case, it's Rav Lazar criticizing him that the Bnei Bavel did not come from Bavel at the beginning of the second Beis Mikdash. So the Gemara continues. Ki osel kamed Rabbi Yechanan. Eventually, when Rish Lakish or Rabbi Lazar came to Rabbi Yechanan and told him what happened, told him the story, Amalei tells him, Lav Hainu Taima. Lav Hainu Taima. Actually, that's not the reason. You're thinking it's because the Bnei Bavel did not come up at the second Beis Mikdash. You're thinking that's why the second Beis Mikdash didn't have a Gilui Shechina like the first one. No. Inami Slik or Kula Bimei Ezra. Even if all of them had come up in the times of Ezra, I have a Shavi Shechina B'Mikdasheni. Still, there wouldn't have been a Gilui Shechina. There wouldn't have been a Hashoras Shechina in the second Beis Mikdash to the same extent as the first. Dichtiv, because the pasuk says Yafta Lekim LeYefes V'Yishkan V'Olei Shem, the Eibishter will enlarge Yefes and he will dwell in the tents of shame, meaning Afagabdi Yafta Lekim LeYefes, even though Hashem will expand Yefes, meaning the Persians will have the schus that through them the second Beis Hamikdash is built, and we'll learn tomorrow how we see that the Persians are descended from Yefes. Nevertheless, Ein Hashchina Shona Ela Ba'Olei Shem. Nevertheless, the Shechina will only rest to the fullest extent only in a tent built, only in a tent, only in the Beis Hamikdash that was built by the descendants of Shem, meaning Shlomo HaMelech, who's descended from Shem, who's descended from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So don't blame the Bavliim that because of them there was no Hashuras Hashchina of the same caliber in the second Beis Hamikdash. It's because it was built under the directions of Kodesh, who was the king of Persia, who comes from Yefes. And we'll continue tomorrow where we see in the Pesukim specifically that the Persians are descended from Yefes.